The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome once again to It Came From Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino.
How you doing?
And celebrating the anniversary of the first time a doctor ever slapped him in the face, Hassan Godwin is off today because it's his birthday. You know, get it? Slapped him.
So a doctor slapped him in the face?
Yeah, because that's when you're born, they smack you.
So you're saying his face is his...
the anniversary.
His face is his rear end,
yeah,
is that what you're saying?
It's the anniversary. He's like, I'm not going to smack him there. I'm going to smack him there and say, fuck-a-da. And then he smacks him in the face. So happy birthday, Hassan.
Happy birthday, Hassan.
And Brian, our engineer, is always here with us, helping us out as usual.
Yay, Brian.
So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also, you're like going to say something.
Yeah, you were like doing the Evelyn Wood speed speech on that. WGBB, not WGBB.
WGBB.
Yes, WGBB.
And also on the GBB website, you can see us on the high-definition web camera right now live.
How you doing?
And I always forget to mention that if you have the multimedia devices, if you have the TuneIn app, you can hear us on that. So you can hear us on your phone. Just go to the TuneIn app.
I didn't know. I would have listened to us on that.
You can hear us.
Yeah.
Instead of coming in, you'll listen to us. That's
yeah. Yeah. All right. Listening to you.
So I'll just take it away with the news. As always, the news is brought to you in part by the guys from the Big Apple Con. That's who we are the official show of. They're having a convention on December 6th called the WinterCon. That's nywintercon.com. Their headliners of right now, I believe it's Timac from The Last Dragon. It's going to be held in Aqueduct, Queens, the Racino. And that is from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., if I'm not mistaken. And then they're also going to have their 20th anniversary of the Big Apple Con, which is going to be in March, celebrating the 20 years ago when they first came into play. And the headliner there is none other than Jason David Frank, the original Green Power Ranger. So I'm always excited about that. So let's see. We're going to start with the sad news. Sad news. Oh, almost forgot. For more information, go to www.nycbm.com. That's New York Comic Book.
And that's not the sad information.
That's the happy information. So the sad news. Sad news. Raymond Almerian Montgomery, the creator and author of the children's book series Choose Your Own Adventure, has died this week. The Choose Your Own Adventure series featured interactive books set in places and times from all over the world and beyond, published by Bantam Books starting way back in 1979. His last title was Gus vs. the Robot King, which was released in 2009. I used to love Choose Your Own Adventure books, and I had no idea that they were still making new ones. I remember reading that as a kid, and I thought that was it. You know, they only had a certain amount. And then it was over with, but I had no idea they were still making brand new Choose Your Own Adventures. Basically, it was a little book with some illustrations, and you assumed the character, and you went off and you read the story, and then it gave you a choice of what to do, and then it decided what page you had to turn to depending on what your option was. And then, of course, sometimes you wind up dead, or sometimes the story carries on until you have the happy ending. So it gave you a lot of chances to reread the book. And like I said, there were many, many, many different times. I remember one book was, there was an Indiana Jones Choose Your Own Adventure book. And, this is going back in the day. For my class project, we did a Choose Your Own Adventure. So every week we had like a little news thing for the school. And my segment was the Choose Your Own Adventure. So I got to read part of the story. And it lasted exactly 1 week because what it was, everybody in the classroom had to decide, had to vote on what option to pick. So the first chapter of the story was us going on to this adventure. And it was hide in a barrel or go on to the boat off to adventure. And everybody voted to hide in a barrel, and that was the end of the story. So that was that was just sad.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, I had a whole plan. I had this all planned. I was talking with the teacher. We had this whole thing. And then the next week, like, oh, well, that's the end of the book.
Wow. What a bunch of gibbet eels you were associated with it.
Yeah, we hid in the barrel.
You hid in the barrel.
And that was the end of the book, yes.
That's the way it goes. You hide in the barrel, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
It's in the archives. It's in the barrel. That's it.
So he was 78. So the creator of the Choose Your Own Adventure books died at the age of 78.
Wow. Sad news.
More sad news. Writer-producer Glenn A. Larson also died this week of esophageal cancer. Glenn had a hand in creating such shows as Quincy M.E. with Jack Klugman, Magnum P.I., Battlestar Galactica, Knight Rider, The Fall Guy, It Takes a Thief, McCloud, The $6 Million Man, Alias Smith and Jones, BJ and the Bear, Switch, Manimal, The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo, Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew Mysteries, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, and Nightman, just to name a few. He was the man, the science fiction guy. He had a lot of controversy surrounding him that he liked to rip off other ideas. So whenever a big thing came out, he had a TV version of that, such as, you know, the Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars.
Right.
And BJ and the Bear was, you know, Smokey and the Bandit. So it was surrounded by controversy.
Elias Smith and Jones was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So there was some controversy around it, but, you know, he...
But that's Hollywood. That's what
they
do anyway.
You know, you make, hey, we got this. What do we got like this? Make something like
this. How many
times
you see a movie come out and then another movie? Well, look at Hitchcock.
Yes.
Hitchcock and then The Girl, you know? It's like, wow.
Or what's that new, that company, Asylum Films? Yeah. I've been trying to get them for years. I've always wanted to talk to these guys on the show.
I love Asylum Films.
But they take whatever movie's out there and they make a low-budget sci-fi channel original movie version of that.
That's why
on their website, they profess that's what they do. And they purposely name it with the same title and the same font and the same kind of imagery on the book. So that way, on the cover box, so that way when you're looking up the movies, it's like, oh, this looks kind of like it. So they'll get a sale based on it. They say it on their website. So that is... Bold.
Yeah, but you got to respect people
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly.
I love Asylum Films. They're like every one of us who go around and try to make a movie.
Yeah.
And with friends and everything and not for a lot of money. And they're doing it.
And they are doing it. So with Glenn, this is what he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, he didn't shy away from it. But he didn't, you know, go out and profess it either. He just kind of did his thing for all these years.
But again, that's what made Hollywood work. I mean, you had some people stealing several ideas, and they worked. Alias Smith and Jones was on for a little bit, yeah.
I remember there was a little show called Nightman. It was on Channel 11, WPIX. It was based off a comic book. And it was a really low-budget, horrible show about a superhero. And... they had it was Glenn Larson's show, and then during it made it to a second season somehow, some way, and then an actor showed up, and he seemed familiar, but I didn't remember who he was, and it turns out that it was the same actor who had played in a previous show of his called Manimal, where a guy got the powers of animals. He had to turn to a hawk and a wolf,
right.
And they actually made a Nightman Manimal crossover, which blew my mind of how they would have this crossover of the same actor doing it, and it was about his daughter, how he passed
it
on.
I remember. It was called Night Manimal.
So that blew my mind of how he managed to do something which was unheard of for a property of a show to get crossover with another property that had nothing to do with each other, only because he was the executive producer of both. They managed to come together. That blew my mind. He, ironically, was only 77.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's crazy.
70 is the new 50.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
All right, so moving along to some other news. Let's see. Speaking of stuff from a long time ago.
Mr. Segway.
A recently discovered Batmobile. From the 1965 Oldsmobile, for all you Bat fans, was the very first official licensed Batmobile ever made. is up for auction. According to Heritage Auctions, the Batmobile was built and designed by 23-year-old Forrest Robertson in a barn in 1960. He completed the project in 1963 after replacing the body of a 1956 Oldsmobile with his own custom design. For the next 3 years, it toured the country as the official promotional vehicle until the George Barris customized Lincoln Futura came out and took over for the show in 1966. The 1963 Batmobile spent nearly 50 years in a field before it was rediscovered and restored in 2008.
In a field.
In a field.
Wow.
So, actually, it would be, if you look at the, like, the old Filmation cartoons, or if you're a really big Batman fan from the comics back then, you can tell the difference in the vehicles before the classic Batmobile came out. It had, like, a head of a bat. Well, it really didn't look like a bat. It was just, like, a crazy head on it. And it was black, and it had, like, a little fin in the back. But it really didn't resemble the, quote-unquote, classic Batmobile car, which is the 1966 version with the two bubbles and a two-seater. I saw a picture of it. I was like, wow, that was the Batmobile. It kind of just blew my mind that was what they made at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have any idea how much the asking price for this
vehicle would be? Don't know. Why don't you tell me?
Okay, so if you happen to have $90,000 lying around.
How many?
You, 90, 90,000.
90, yes. Yeah.
You can own.
Well, you know who'll buy it? The guy who had the 1.5 million laying around for the first Superman comic book.
He spent the money on the comic book. Yeah. He can't afford the car.
No, I'm sure I'm sure he'll make, you know.
He's living in the barn where they found the Batmobile.
Well, right. Well, now the guy could buy the Batmobile and sit in the Batmobile and read the Superman comic.
That's very good.
Batmobile probably has real bats living in it by this time.
Yes, now we're real bats. That's another $1,000 they tag on.
Lifelike bats.
Let's see. Oh, okay. From the It Took Long Enough department, Spencer Lacey Gannis is suing Disney for royalties from the movie Frozen. It seems that Spencer, who voiced the main character Elsa at 12 years old, was only paid $926 for her role. Of note, Spencer wasn't the only voice of Elsa in the movie. Eva Belle played the young Elsa, while Idina Menzel provided the singing voice, which is the most popular one. And Spencer only appeared in two scenes of the movie, but she wants more than her $900 check. And as of this week, Frozen has pulled in $1.2 billion worldwide.
And to answer your question, that's why it took long enough, because this you know, she was waiting for the
to hit the billion mark.
Yeah, for the Queen Mary to come in, and there it was. So
you figured that she would have been on the bandwagon when Frozen was the big thing last year.
No, because she didn't really care, but she was in somebody's company, and they said, "Are you kidding me? You could do this," and probably was a lawyer.
Probably, but you think it's $900 for two scenes in a movie. That doesn't sound a voice. That doesn't seem so bad. I guess, you know, it's in the contract whether or not how much, you know, royalties you get. But she wants the big bag of money.
I would have took less money in residuals.
Yeah, that's Jack Nicholson when he took that deal to be in Batman, the 1987 Batman.
Wait until they get a load of me.
Yeah, he took a pay cut to be in the movie. But he signed a deal to get a percentage of the merchandising rights. And oh my God, did they get merchandising rights off of that movie. Yeah. One of the most brilliant moves.
That's why he's Jack Nicholson.
And, you know, that's the new thing now that people do that. So he was the groundbreaking of that. Reminds me of the girl who played Alice on Honeymooners, Audrey Meadows.
Right.
She signed a deal at the time, which was unheard of for the Honeymooners, which was that if the word if was in the contract, which made him agree to it, if the show was ever rerun, she would get a percentage of it all the way until, you know, until she died. And she was the only one that made any money off of that, because no one else knew that. No one else ever heard of that sort of thing. But she just said, if it does go into reruns or if it does air again, I get a percentage. And she did.
Wow. You talk about hindsight.
Yeah.
Well, not hindsight. You talk about foresight.
Yeah.
Foresight.
So that was another thing that's just, wow, no one thinks of that stuff. And then you put in a contract, and then there it is, groundbreaking until...
Know how she got that part?
Oh, yes, yes. Why don't you tell us? I remember this story very vividly.
that Jack Benny, listen to me, Jackie Gleason thought she was too pretty for the part.
Yep.
And she went back and she got her dressed herself like an Alice-like
She dressed character. Herself down.
She dressed very down, and she came back, and he said, if somebody went through that trouble, that much trouble, you know, yeah. She got the part.
So that woman was smart.
Yeah.
Smart.
And then Jane, her sister, married Steve Allen.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
And they were married for several years until they both passed.
See, that's why we keep you around as a senior correspondent. Look at that. I learned something today. Wow.
See, I learned something too. You just taught me about the residual thing. All right, move on.
Moving on. Speaking of residuals and stuff that people come up with.
Residuals and stuff that people come up with. Segue.
The cast of the 1998 film Twins are planning to return in a sequel where they will meet their third brother, played by none other than Eddie Murphy, in a movie that's going to be called Triplets.
Wait a minute. Yes, and our audience goes crazy. They gasp in anticipation of that. but this is DeVito, Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger and DeVito are coming back, teaming up with Eddie Murphy to be in a movie called Triplets.
Triplets. Oh, my God.
Which, wow. And it will be directed by the original director of Twins, Ivan Reitman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expected to be released in June of 2015. So how about that? I remember Twins.
Oh, yeah. Twins was a... If you look at Twins, it's an amusing movie. I'm not going to say it's the funniest movie, but it's an amusing movie.
It was a ridiculous premise.
And the man with two heads wasn't. With Rosie Grier and Ray Milland. That was fine. You dealt with that.
Yes, I believed every other movie premise except for Twins. Every other one. Yeah, I buy that. Twins, no, yeah. No. But the fact that they made it work was an important thing. Like, I can't believe how they're going to make this work. And then they did, which blew my mind.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it reminds me of Multiplicity. I was just talking about this with a friend of mine.
I never watched that. I never had the urge to watch that. Not really? That I didn't want to, or just never, you know, did.
It was Michael Keaton showing off his range of acting abilities.
Right.
Where the premise is that he's a guy, and he goes and he clones himself because he can't handle the workload and his home life. So he clones himself to make another person to help him out. And when he makes a clone of himself, it's a different version of the same character, so it's the more masculine, aggressive type person. And then they feel that the two of them can't do it alone, so they make another clone of himself, which is the more effeminate guy. So it's like the odd couple and then him in the middle, but it's him playing all the characters. And what was groundbreaking about it was that it was, you know, him doing all those things, and they were interacting with each other, which is something at the time was very hard to do. You know, you can have a double movie, but they never touch, never, you know, it's just,
right.
The camera stands still, and they talk a little bit, or, you know, it's the Parent Trap, where it's the same actors doing
right, and you, you can't see the imaginary line.
Yeah. Right, so this one, they were actually moving around, interacting, because they were using the same technology that they did with Back to the Future, which was the camera shot the film once, and then they were able to overlay the image so that way the camera moved and you had both images. As long as they didn't, you know, really touch each other, it worked. So they did that, and he played off each other very well. So, like, the scenes when he's playing off himself was phenomenal, hilarious. And then they got to a point where they decided to make a fourth copy. So they took a copy of a copy and made another copy. So he wasn't all there. He wasn't the brightest knob in the bulb, you know, brightest bulb in the... What's the saying?
I'll bail you out on this. Sharpest tool in the shed. Okay?
Yes, thank you. I'll go with that one.
Yeah. That's why I'm here.
Yes. And so then, you know, he played the fool. He played the macho guy. So it's like watching a Marx Brothers movie where all four of them are just different characteristics, but they're all the same guy. It was hilarious how they did that.
I got to watch it then.
But you didn't see it, so it was,
I didn't see it.
And that concept, which was, I just accepted, all right, so that's how it's going to be. I believe that. But Twins, no. No, I don't believe in Twins.
Twins was funny just because of the delivery of Arnie over there, his delivery with lines. And when he first Did everybody see it in the studio? Did you see? No, okay. When he first, you've seen it.
Yes, I've seen it.
The look on his face, that was, to me, worth the movie. The look on his face after he has sex for the first time. That was just hysterical. Anyway, go ahead.
So that's it for the news. I made sure I had a short news because we have a super special guest coming up.
Oh, my God.
She'll be calling in soon. And that is none other than Amy Jo Johnson. For those of you who do not know, she was started her career as the original Pink Power Ranger.
She has an amazing career, and she just started it.
Yeah, as the original Pink Power Ranger. And then she moved on to a television show called Felicity, which was very popular for a J.J. Abrams show, which I have my own passion about. And then she moved on to another show, which is called Flashpoint, which is a Canadian show, which was a hybrid between Canada and the United States. It aired on CBS for, I think, 5 years. So she's had a long career, many movies in between, so I want to make sure we had plenty of time for that. It's funny because I've talked to a lot of people telling them about this interview because, for me, it's a huge thing. For the show itself, it's one of probably the biggest names we've had. We've had on the show. I mean, we've done Mark Hamill, but he wasn't on the show. We did a separate interview. And Amber Benson was also another big one. We did Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks in the Star Wars movie. He called in. Great guy. So this is, for us, is a big deal. So I was telling people about it. And
we did have the red Power Ranger that called in for
The second Power Ranger.
That was the banner show over here that... Brian orchestrated.
Yeah, it was
quite
one of many experiments that we did.
Yes.
So it's interesting what people have to say about her. So depending how old you are, depends what you know her from. And it was pretty big deal. So I want to make sure we have all the time for her. So we're going to take our break there, Brian. We're good. And we'll be right back with Canfin Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Was hot. Now back to our show.
And welcome back. Came from the radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking along with our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, and Brian, the engineer, always helping us out. Today, I didn't even know that was in the background. That was not planned. We have super special guests. As we mentioned earlier, she is the original Pink Power Ranger. She's gone on to do many, many things. Writer, director, actress, producer, singer, mom. It is none other than Amy Jo Johnson. Say hi, Amy.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, God, are we live?
We are live on the air.
Okay.
So this is completely air. We're on the air right now, live. So no cursing, please.
Okay. I won't.
So my first question to you, as I just mentioned, writer, actress, producer, singer, dancer. Did I miss anything? Right?
I don't know about dancing. Not much of a dancer. I was a gymnast.
A gymnast, okay. So gymnast. Yeah. And mom. How do you do it all? That's the first question. How do you do it all?
You know what? I'm a little exhausted right now. My husband actually last night, my husband and my daughter went to a hotel in the city we live in to just unplug and chill out for a second because I really needed a break. But you know what? I find the hardest thing with pursuing this career of writing and directing is really managing my time and making sure I'm still a really good mom. So that's been the biggest challenge. But I think it's through this Indiegogo campaign that it's just been really on overdrive. So it ends on Sunday, so I can sort of sleep again and refocus and get back to the actual art of making the movie.
Now, as the Indiegogo campaign, what is this project you're talking about? I know it's been all over the internet, especially of what you did last week, which was go out in your Power Ranger outfit to sing. So that really made a big thing because people love Power Rangers. So what is this campaign about?
Okay, so it's The Space Between, which will be my first feature film as a writer-director. I have three shorts under my belt. And so we're raising the money on Indiegogo.com under The Space Between. And so basically it's like having a little store open for about 30 days where we're sort of selling perks. I'm doing artwork where you can buy, you write me a letter and then I'll paint a picture and write a song based off the letter, to headshots, to memorabilia from the film, to get your name or likeness in the film, to be an extra in the film. Then we had like pizza parties and all kinds of fun stuff. But anyway, so that's how we're raising the money, to at least half the money to do the feature that we're going to shoot in June. And then the rest of the money we'll apply for grants and stuff, because we're in Canada, in Toronto, and so there's lots of different avenues to apply for different grants to help make this film.
So why, you've done three other small short films, right?
Yeah, so I did Bent maybe 2 years ago, that was my first short film, and we actually did an Indiegogo campaign for that as well. And then Lines, which is in the festival circuit right now. And then we also did Shooting Blanks, which you actually can watch online. It's a 7-minute prequel to The Space Between, which is a heartfelt comedy.
So how is it doing a short film as opposed to going and doing a feature film? I mean, what's the difference between the two things, besides the amount of time it's going to do to make the film?
Yeah, the time and all that stuff. Well, I don't have a feature film under my belt yet. So, you know, obviously writing it is a whole other monster. And so we're on the fourth draft, and I'm still working on the script, which I think is in a great place right now. And then the shooting will be longer. The short films took 2 days, and we're actually going to shoot the feature for 20 days. And then, you know, just the whole process of editing and putting all the music, it's just magnified to this much larger scale from doing a short film, which I did those shorts to really get my feet wet as a director and really hone my skills and prove to myself that I could do it in the first place as well.
So before that, you were acting, right?
For 20 years, yeah.
At what point in your career were you like, you know what, I just want to direct? Because there's some actors out there that never go beyond just acting. So what was the inspiration to go to the next level?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons, but I've always wanted to. I love writing, and I love that process. And I think also being a woman and in my early 40s and just, I don't know, wanting to not, there's a part of me that just doesn't want to care what I look like anymore. I just want to focus on creating and the art. And I'm still going to be in the films that I do. I'll have a small part so I can focus more on the directing. But it just takes the pressure off, I feel. And I'm also loving it. As soon as I did the first short film, I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want to do with the rest of my career, is move over to writing and directing.
And speaking of your career, you said 20 years, that would be Power Rangers when you first started.
Yeah, that was my first acting job, yeah.
For most of us, you know, it was a job, and, you know, we've gone to different jobs. Like, you myself, I remember doing a different job than I do now 20 years ago, and someone would come up to me and say, hey, do you remember this? I'm like, I don't remember that. I barely remember anything. Because it's on film, does that help or does that make a difference when people come and ask you about questions about shows you've done 10, 15, 20 years ago?
It certainly does help. This high school kid just, like, made this little movie for me and edited it and sent it over, and I just watched it, and I actually put it on, I tweeted it just now because I thought it was really sweet. And he had footage from parts that I've done that I've never seen, and it was really nice to watch it. Like, I did a episode with, what was that show that Charlie Sheen was on for a while?
Spin City.
Yeah. So I'd never seen that when I did an episode on Spin City, and I'd never seen it, so I got to see it a minute ago.
You played, was it The Mayor's Daughter, right?
Yeah, yep.
Well, yes, obviously, Monk has seen this.
Yes, I have seen it, yes.
Yes.
So when people ask you about these things, like, do you think about maybe I should just kind of embellish the story? Or you, like, have you ever been like, I don't know, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about?
Yeah. My God, I think I did 152 episodes of Power Rangers. We did so many within 2 years. It was crazy. I really don't remember, you know, half of what we shot. It was just like a machine. We were just cranking through. So, yeah, no, I'm not afraid to say I don't remember it all. And we were, you know, in our early 20s having a really good time at that time, too. I certainly don't remember everything.
I have a question for you. Now you said you have a child, this a girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how old is she?
She's turning 6.
She's turning 6. Okay, is there a library of Power Rangers that mommy is in? And does she know about
it? It's on Netflix.
What?
It's on Netflix now.
On Netflix. How does she handle that mommy's the Pink Power Ranger?
Well, you know, we watched a couple episodes. I don't think she was all that impressed. she kind of liked it, and you know, we watched maybe 3 or 4, and then I realized at one point she was just watching it to make me happy.
Yeah.
A couple more of them.
Yeah.
And then she's never mentioned it again. I guess it's just not her thing.
Yeah, no.
She's really
no.
into Harry Potter right now. I think she's a little more.
That's cool. Yeah, you're everything to you're everything to your kid until they become a teenager, and then there's mom. I know people here. Don't embarrass me.
You know, yeah, I know. I'm asking her not to do that to me.
Yeah, and then they come back to you after, you know, they're 20 or 20 plus. So just giving you...
That's what I hear.
Yeah. No, trust me, it's true. My daughter's 31 now, and we've been through all that, so that's why I'm passing that on to you.
Oh, thank you. And so she's back.
And 10 to 1, she'll be watching the Power Rangers by then and say, hey, this is my mom, you know?
Yeah, it'll be real retro.
Yeah, there you go.
when you're singing, and I've noticed that in Power Rangers you were singing in there, and then you were singing when you did Felicity, you were a writer singer, and then you had some music in Flashpoint, and you're doing the soundtrack for this movie. Is that a conscious decision where you're like, hey, producers, I want to sing in the show, or did it just kind of stumble into it?
Yeah, well, I've always sort of kept music. So it's like a hobby, where a cathartic hobby for me, where I, you know, write in my journal, and then I'll take lyrics from my journal and put them on, you know, to music. And And so it's always just been in that place for me. So when I would do a show, like actually for Felicity, JJ and Matt had written the character as a dancer. And so when I got the role, they were like, can you dance? And I'm like, not really. But I do play guitar and sing. And so then they changed my character to be a guitar, a singer-songwriter. And they used a couple of my songs on the show, which was really fun. And then through the years, I've just recorded a few albums. I have three albums. So like for Flashpoint, actually the two, Mark and Stephanie, who created the show, were actually fans of Felicity and had liked my music before they cast me in the role. And so they asked if they could use some of my music on the show as well. So I got to have a song, two songs actually, on Flashpoint as well. So it just sort of happened.
Is the creative process different or the same when you're thinking of movies as opposed to music? Because I know about neither.
Well, for me, the one thing I think I bring into every art form is myself. I really make it a bit cathartic, or just draw from people I know or stories that have happened to me or stories I've heard, and that's really the only way I know how to write, especially for music, and I'm finding as well for screenplays.
So,
although The Space Between is purely fiction, I most of the characters, somebody's in my head that I'm writing.
That was the follow-up question I was going to do. So why don't you tell us about The Space Between? What is this about?
It's about a man who discovers that his baby, his child, is not his own, and that his wife had taken his infertility into her own hands, and she slept with the busboy at work. And both of them are in their late 30s, early 40s, and so I think there was a bit of a panic on her side where she thought, oh my God, he's shooting blanks, and I might never be able to have a child. So she panicked, and they didn't have a ton of money, and so that's what she went and did that, which was not the best idea in the world. But the movie starts off at that place, and then Mitch, the man, goes on this journey to find the biological father.
So where did you come up with that idea?
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, that's going to be a success, because if I think about making them, it's going to be nothing that involved and intricate and amazingly interesting, because that is a very interesting concept. So yeah, where'd you come up with that?
I know. So my first short film was called Bent, and that was based off of actually me and my best friend growing up. And it's a short film about lifelong friendship and these two girlfriends that get together every year just to sit in one of the girls' mom's grave, sit in the graveyard and just talk about life. And one of the characters in Bent was this woman who was Jackie, who was 6 months pregnant, and when she sees her best friend and she confides in her that she had slept with this guy, Danny Baker, 6 months before, and she's married, and Danny Baker is not her husband. So that's where sort of the idea stemmed from, and then just sort of evolved. And when I decided I wanted to write my first feature, to write The Space Between, I sort of took that seed. It's not based off of Bent at all, but I took that seed from Bent and created this story around it.
Wow. Does that have to do with you being a mother, that this idea came from Bent?
You know what? I think so many people, being in my early 40s and, you know, having one child, and I've had tried in the past for a second, I think so many people deal with infertility, and and I really like to bring in subjects that are painful and that are loaded, and then try to find a humor in and around them. I know that sounds weird, but I like to do that with grief. And one of the characters in The Space Between is about 22, and she cuts. She self-mutilates because of lack of self-esteem and self-love, which I think is epidemic in young people these days. And so bringing all these serious subjects but then making it a heartfelt comedy is sort of something I'm striving to do and like to do, because I think there is so much pain in life, and it's nice to be able to figure out how to laugh around it.
Totally, because, I mean, you know, the darkest times, you can always find humor in that, and it always can make you feel comfort somehow.
Yeah. And the fact that sometimes we're so alone in the pain that's happening, and to see that so many people go through the same thing, you know, so many people deal with the same issues and have no idea because they're so private about it.
Now, Charlie mentioned about how your daughter will leave and then come back. How do you deal with the millions, I'm going to say millions, of Amy Jo Johnson fans out there, young girls? I mean, back then and even now, how do you deal with and how do you feel about all these women, young girls, looking up to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't really think about it that much. But in the same time, if I do think about it and I do look at the movies I'm trying to make, I do think they have positive messages. Like, I just finished a short film last year called Lines, and it's about this woman who goes to the dermatologist's office to get a mole removed, and the doctor tries to lip filler with Botox and lip filler and all this stuff. And it's about, you know, embracing your imperfections. So hang on one second. I am so sorry.
Uh-oh. We're having technical difficulties right now.
That's the beauty of this being alive.
Yes, we are live on Camp
Live,
Radio
not on tape.
Amy Jo Johnson. So while she's dealing with...
Sorry.
Oh, there we go. She's back. She's back. We didn't even have time to spiel with the time. But thank you for coming back. We appreciate it.
Francesca's hungry. Sorry about that. I sent her downstairs to ask her dad. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so hopefully, you know, if there are young girls looking up to me and for some sort of something, hopefully the art that I make can help them in some way. Or, you know, I don't feel like I'm putting anything negative out there, so I think it's okay.
I am on the flip side. I'm gonna add a little humor to this. On the flip side, I'm sure, even though you really don't do conventions too much, because I know that's not
I've
your
done
thing.
One.
You've
yeah.
done one convention all this time.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been some men that come see you and be like,
oh, yeah, are you kidding? Power Rangers 20 years ago, you know, that was a little boy show mostly, right? I don't know.
So how do you deal with that?
Or how does your husband deal with that?
They're like, oh, you were my first crush. It's like in my head, I'm like, I know exactly what that means. I don't really want to think about it. But you know what? I'm trying to, like, really, like, first of all, you know, oh my God. The Indiegogo campaign I'm doing, honestly could not be funding this movie without all of these amazing people who did love Power Rangers and have supported me and followed my career. And, it's been incredible, the support. And, I mean, we're at $117,000 right now after 3 weeks. And it's, like, unbelievable, because it's only because of all these people that were huge fans of Power Rangers and Felicity or whatever it was, you know. So I'm incredibly grateful.
Well, it's to me, and I'm the senior correspondent, so I'm the older of the bunch here, and I just love how the role of women changed in this business, and being in your early 20s and being an empowered woman, a superhero, it carries a responsibility. And doing what you're doing now, it's just really commendable.
Thank you. And you know what? It's so funny. My name is Amy Jo, but I've played more Julies in my career. It's so weird. Flashpoint. And you know what? My sister's name is Julie. Isn't that funny? And I never picked the name. It was just, I got these roles, Jules Callahan, Julie and Felicity. It's so funny. I feel like a Julie.
So maybe you're not you. You're actually your sister in disguise.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Amy Jo said, hey, listen, I got this live thing. Could you do it for me?
All right, so I'm going to have to ask you. I guess this is something I've been dying to know for years, and I want to know your opinion on Power Rangers. When the original three cast members decided to leave or were fired, depending on who you ask, there was a lot of times when we watched the show where they had like stand-ins and the people that didn't look or sound anything like, you know, the original three cast members. When you were working there, if you remember, what was that like? Like, this isn't going to work? Or was it like, oh, okay, they're not here anymore?
It was so confusing, because I look back now and I probably should have and maybe would have done it differently. I didn't even have an agent when I got Power Rangers. It was a non-union show, and the reason why they did leave was because they asked to go union. And good for them for asking, right? I didn't even really know what that was. And so we didn't all band together and ask to go union. I do think if we had, they would have fired all of us.
Really? Because I can say that there are three shows off the top of my head where they did that. They did it with Friends, where all of them were like, we want more money. Not just
big,
union,
big
not union.
Bang Theory.
They just did that?
The three major actors... They got what they wanted to.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, but the thing is you have to look at Power Rangers. It's still on the air, and they still have different casts every year.
Right.
And I think they knew that they were going to be doing that, and I think they knew that we were all completely disposable, you know? Like,
That's so sad.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that was just what it was, but it was really sad when they left, and it was kind of very confusing and what's happening, and I think I left a year after, but I left on different terms. I actually went and asked if I could leave. I was like, I'm kind of done. I've done, you know, 152 episodes. I'm ready to try something else. And Shuki Levy, one of the producers of the show, actually said, yes, you can leave as long as you do this movie Suzy Q for me. And I'm like, oh wow, well that's a great deal. Sure. So that, you know, I left on really good terms, and he handed me this amazing little movie, and so that was great. But it was really sad when Twi and Walter and Austin left, and it was incredibly confusing, and, you know, learned what a union was and that we weren't union. And but, you know, whatever. It was my first job, and that was 20 years ago. So
for the three major roles you've been in, Power Rangers, Felicity, and Flashpoint, you actually left each show, and then you've came back. You know, you came back in the Turbo movie for Power Rangers. You came back in Felicity for the last two episodes when they had the whole time travel thing, and then you came. And I did not know, I did a little research, I didn't know that the reason you had left Flashpoint was to have a baby. So I was watching, it's like, oh my God, they shot her, she left the show. I was like, I wonder why she left, and then she came back, oh my God, she came back, I couldn't believe it. So...
I don't know. I didn't even know if I was going to die or not. I just know I was really pregnant.
So
you know what? I think for Felicity, it was my mom had just passed away, and I was going through so much. And so I went to J.J. Abrams, and I said, I'm really going through so much. I think I need a break. I think I need to go, and I don't know. So I went to Chicago, and I recorded an album, and JJ again was amazing, and he's like, "Yes, you can leave. You need to, but will you do, you know, the first three or four episodes of the next season and come back later?" And I'm like, "Of course, yes, yes, yes." So, yeah, I know. Some of my friends are like, "Why? You're so stupid. Like, why?" But you know what? I'm always just moving by gut and instinct, and that's kind of how I roll.
I believe there's always reasons for what we do, and you got to follow what you think is right. So
yeah. I was really, you know, I was really heartbroken. My mom had passed away while I was shooting the show, and it just never time to really process that and figure it out for myself. So,
let me ask you a question here. Being that you wear all these different hats, and obviously you're very talented and artistic, and what, other than being a wife and a mother, what would be your ideas of the biggest thing you could accomplish right now?
Make a really, really good little film. I just want The Space Between to be an awesome little heartfelt comedy that is a gem. I really, really want that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that might be on the way.
A lot of actors, and they strive for one iconic role. You have had three, and you're still going strong. Is that the goal, to make this most penultimate movie ever, and then that's going to be it, or you see yourself doing more stuff further down the line?
Oh, yeah, no, I have my baby, is called Crazier Than You, and that is a movie I wrote about my mom, who happened to be in a cult for 12 years. And it's the love story of my mom and my dad. And that one is like, that's going to be a $5 million budget. And I want to do that one after I have maybe two features under my belt. And yeah, oh no, there's a whole plan. Like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my career, is write and direct films. Yeah.
So now when you have your Academy Award winning film, because I always think positive. When you do have your Academy Award-winning film, and you're making so many films, would you be like Hitchcock and putting yourself in some sort of cameo role, since you've been behind the camera before?
Oh, well, so the Space Between, I do have a small role in it. And actually, for Crazier Than You, I really want to play my mom when she's older, when she's 50. And she, that's my role. That's the role I've been waiting for my whole life.
Excellent, excellent.
So we have about less than 5 minutes to go. So this is the time to promote any websites, any shout-outs you want to give. Now's the chance. What do you want to promote, Amy?
Well, like I said, there is 1 week left. November 23rd is the last day for the Space Between Indiegogo campaign. So it's on Indiegogo.com. And if you go to film and look for The Space Between, you'll find us. You'll find it. There's, like I said, there's tons of fun, great, really cool perks on there. And other than that, I don't know. I'm on Twitter. It's at _ Amy Jo Johnson. And then I'm also on Facebook. It might be A to the double J, or it's Amy Jo Johnson.
I remember looking up the perks for the campaign, and I saw one that blew my mind, which was for $500, you would get the pizza party, and you get to come down, meet Amy Jo, and watch episodes of Power Rangers while having pizza.
Where did you know? Wasn't that a fun one? It was $400.
Oh, $400.
Oh my God.
They're all sold out, so I sold 15 in New York and then 15 in LA, and I don't want to add more because I so want it to be a cozy, fun night where we're just like, I don't want it to be too many people, right? I want it to be, that's 30 people already because it's you and a friend. And so I know, I think that sounds really fun.
My God, now let me ask you something, because you will be coming to New York for this pizza party?
And
LA?
Yes.
You're going to... All right, well, I'm going to put you on the spot now, Amy, because I know your movies are going to be a success, even success. Sorry, Rented Lips. But anyway, this is what I'm putting you on the spot. The pizza party in New York.
Yeah.
Would you invite us?
Do you guys want to come to my pizza party?
We would cover it so.
We would
so
cover it. We would cover it, and oh my God, it would. You talk about a promotion. Oh my God! And besides, I'm Italian. I'm in. You know, pizza.
Yeah,
that's it.
It's got to be good pizza. Maybe you can recommend the right pizza spot.
Oh my God, I can. Are you kidding me? If you saw the size of me, you'd know I'm the best man for the job here. But, yeah, so I'm putting you on the spot right now. I will get you the pizza place and everything like that if we get invited to this.
How many are you?
Two.
Just two.
Oh, you guys can come for sure.
All right. Well, then, you know, don't lie to me, Amy.
I'm not lying. You guys can come.
All right. All right.
It's going to be a cozy, fun pizza party.
Okay. Pretty cool. Yes. And we will cover it. And I will get you the pizzas from my own special pizza place.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Well, this is a deal.
Okay? So we got to get in there to cover it, and that's it.
All right.
Thank you, Amy. You're the best.
Thank you. Bye.
We got 2 minutes left. I know I have to, I'm going to be embarrassed to ask this, but I have to ask you one final question before we go off the air. Amy, Joe, what time is it?
What time is it?
Yes, what time is it?
4:57.
Oh my God! You just ruined my. You're supposed to say it's morphin' time. You know, that was my whole.
Oh!
I was playing this the whole week. I was like, I can't believe I'm gonna ask you.
It's morphin' time.
Thanks. Oh my God! Well, that just. That, all right. So, thank you, Amy Jo, for being on. We will be in contact with the pizza bar. I really appreciate that.
Okay, awesome.
That is the space in between. The contest is done next. The campaign is done next week on the 23rd. So that's actually, yeah, next week.
Yeah. Oh, so, and really quick, there's a Stage It show. StageIt.com on the 23rd is a live webcast. Free ticket. Just go to StageIt.com, look for Amy Jo Johnson, and you can get your free ticket to be, and it's like sort of like a goodbye party.
Oh, awesome. So that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you missed any part of the show, you can go online to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com, and listen to our archives, which will be up in a week or so. Once again, thanks again, Amy Jo, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care, Amy Jo.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.